This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
LIBOR the Liberator. Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Our coverage of the fallout of the financial crisis continues this morning with a roar from the LIBOR. LIBOR stands for London Interbank Offered Rate. It's the key lending rate between banks. We've mentioned it a lot lately because it's been one of the main factors behind the tight credit markets. Today, that rate fell again, meaning credit continues to loosen up. LIBOR is at 2.7% on three-month loans. That's helping push what looks so far like an Election Day rally. The Dow is up 156 points, 1.6% to 9476. The S&P 500 is up 2%, the NASDAQ up 1.2%. European shares are all higher right now as well. An interest rate cut from Australia today raised hopes for similar action this week in Europe. Another piece of the market's push into the green this morning comes from a report the U.S. Treasury may be ready to rescue more than just banks. The Wall Street Journal says the department's looking at using some of the $700 billion rescue fund to buy stakes in other companies. Marketplace's Elisa Roth has the latest from New York.
The original bailout program was designed to help banks, in part to encourage them to continue lending to businesses, consumers, and each other. But all kinds of companies, from automakers to bond insurers, have been begging Uncle Sam for help. Under this new plan, the government would buy into a much broader range of financial firms than it has been. The real idea would be to help companies that support the wider economy, like the financial arm of General Electric, GE Capital. But the election could make any new plans more complicated, since the Treasury Secretary says he wants to include the new administration in making plans from here on out, and both candidates have strong ideas on how they'd like the rescue to be handled. The Treasury Department's only saying that it's looking at a lot of different options. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Remember when the auto industry's biggest problem was sky-high gasoline? Back then, Chrysler ran this promotion that gave new car buyers a set price for gas. But with gas prices falling fast, that guarantee isn't looking too special anymore. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Chrysler's gas card guaranteed buyers they'd pay just $2.99 for a gallon of gas. That's a great deal when a gallon's selling for $4.50. Now, not so much. Kim Korth at auto consulting firm IRN says psychologically, the promotion worked.
It was attempting to reduce fuel prices as being the reason why no one was buying light trucks. And so from that standpoint, I think it served its purpose.
The lower prices might save Chrysler a few dollars on the promotion, but Peter DiLorenzo at AutoExtremist.com says not nearly enough.
It might be a little bit advantageous for them. However, whatever little gains they get in this gas deal won't have an effect ultimately on the company's fate.
That fate probably includes a sale to another car company and or a cash infusion from the government. But any decision's on hold until after the election. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
To avoid the crush of long lines at polls today, states like Nevada started offering early voting. The Silver State has actually been doing that for 10 years. Some voting machines end up in stores. And as Janice Baker reports, interest in this year's election has been good for business.
Nevada's economy has been in shock. Unemployment's around 7%. The state has the highest rate of foreclosures in the country, and retail business is down. But early voting has helped ease the pain for participating stores. Scott Muehlrath is general manager at the Galleria at Sunset Mall.
This year has been far and away the busiest session of early voting we've seen.
At a nearby Albertsons grocery store, Eugene and Natasha Bosley waited in line nearly an hour to cast their ballots.
Yeah, I actually went and got a soda and some chips because I didn't know how long the wait was going to be.
It's always extra milk or bread or eggs to pick up.
Albertsons produce manager Kathy Rooney says other voters also pulled double duty.
I can tell by my in-stock conditions when I order that we've definitely been busier.
Back at the Galleria, Scott Muehlrath says early voting has been a way to kickstart sales before the holidays.
We will always use the mall as early voting. It's been a home run every year, especially this year.
Nearly 100 other stores in and around Las Vegas offered early voting. I'm Janice Baker for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, November 4th at Marketplace.org. The world's largest temp staffing company announced a 27% drop in profit today. Adecco is based in Switzerland. The company says hiring slumps in the U.S. and U.K. aren't giving Adecco much visibility these days. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson has more on the prospects for this industry.
There are about 3 million temporary workers employed on any given day in the U.S., and some experts think they've got a leg up in an economic downturn. Vicki Smith is a professor at the University of California, Davis, and author of The Good Temp.
Employers don't want to take on the added costs of hiring people on a permanent basis. But one of the really big reasons is that you don't have permanent workforce on your payroll that you're obligated to in the long run.
Still, things aren't exactly rosy right now in the temp world. Randy Hatcher's firm, MAU Inc., helps employers find temporary workers. He says revenues are down about 3% from last year, and he projects they'll drop further.
I don't think we've talked to one customer whose volume will be up. And I would say our average customer, their volume will be flat to down.
Still, Hatcher says when the economy does turn around, temps will be the first to benefit because he says they can be hired within hours. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
The Federal Communications Commission today debates a proposal to more than double the airspace used by wireless devices like cell phones and computers. Television broadcasters, though, warn that any new over-the-air data transmissions will interfere with TV signals. John Dimsdale has that story.
The new airspace becomes available next February when television broadcasters go digital. That'll free up frequencies in between TV channels called white spaces that internet service providers are salivating over.
High-tech companies, universities, and consumer groups are all calling the TV white spaces the place where we could get Wi-Fi on steroids.
Michael Calabrese at the New America Foundation says the extra airspace will generate all sorts of new wireless technologies.
The ability to move more data through more walls and over longer distances.
Calabrese says the new frequencies will deliver fast internet service to hard-to-reach rural areas. But some TV broadcasters and entertainers who use wireless microphones say those airwaves should stay empty to avoid interference. The FCC did find that computer and TV signals can be kept separate, and supporters of opening up the TV airwaves expect a favorable vote today. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Be honest. If you have a backyard, there's probably at least a corner of it that's underutilized. In San Francisco, some urban farmers would like to do something about that, revolutionizing your cooking and maybe even the agriculture business as we know it. Lisa Morehouse has more.
Shoveling soil into buckets, Trevor Paik looks like a farmer. He's tall and tanned and wears overalls and a checkered shirt. But instead of riding a tractor, Paik hops on his bike to get to his crops. His farm is in backyards across San Francisco. Paik left his job as a mortgage broker and launched a startup called My Farm. The idea is simple. Install an organic garden in a customer's backyard and harvest a box of vegetables four times a month. Customers pay between $25 and $35 a week. Trevor Paik,
Vegetables only have to travel across the backyard.
My farm customer, Hillary Ball, doesn't trust store-bought food labeled organic.
Here's some spinach, gourmet baby greens.
She watches a team from my farm plant heirloom seeds in her backyard.
It's the ultimate control freak's way to control what's coming into your house and what's going into your body.
Ball is typical of my farm customers. She doesn't have the time or skills to grow her own organic vegetables.
I have a black thumb. I can't grow anything. Everything dies.
Since May, my farm has installed more than 50 gardens and is gearing up to expand. The company is developing an operating manual and training videos for farmers. Jonathan Landek is with the Center for Agroecology and Sustainable Food Systems at UC Santa Cruz. He sees opportunity for my farm's decentralized business model.
What this system does is it really challenges the structures that we have in place for food production and distribution.
Paik started my farm after doing a low-budget market test. He put an ad on Craigslist. 200 responses in 20 minutes told him he was onto something. To recruit customers, my farm put up 50 flyers in San Francisco neighborhoods.
We've been so busy since we've never had a chance to do any marketing again.
My farm has reaped close to $90,000 in revenue since May. In San Francisco, I'm Lisa Morehouse for Marketplace.
Economic slowdown is especially hard for small businesses. They're dealing with the same issues the big companies are dealing with. Credit is hard to come by. Customers are cutting back. Marketplace entrepreneurship reporter Mitchell Hartman recently talked to some small biz owners about their worries. He sat in on a sort of group therapy session.
I feel powerless. Like there's not really much I can do except stay the course.
It has hit us pretty fast, so I don't think any of us are really sure what's going to happen next.
Meet Mark Lipscomb and Meredith Smith. Smith is an accountant. Lipscomb has a computer networking firm. Every month, behind closed doors, they meet with five other entrepreneurs to talk shop. Usually it's about upgrading their marketing or keeping talented employees. These days, they're asking how to stay solvent, keep customers from canceling orders, or avoid selling out at a loss. Business coach Mike Wright coordinates the meetings.
It's really valuable to be talking with other people who know, basically know your pain and know your joy.
Joy and pain, not exactly what you'd expect to hear at a business meeting, but over the last 6 months, these entrepreneurs have learned to trust each other.
I think something like this, because it's small and intimate and we've got to know each other fairly well, that this is probably going to be one of the best places to feel safe.
Are you used to discussing issues like how do I make it through the next few weeks financially?
Nope. I grew up in a family where you didn't discuss those kind of things.
How to cope with the looming recession is the main topic these days, but not everyone in the group is suffering equally. Ken Ayers runs a nutritional testing firm.
I think for in the industry that I'm in the food industry, we're somewhat insulated from it because most people continue to eat, even in the downtime.
Ayers gets a laugh, but the economy soon turns the mood serious again. These entrepreneurs have put their lives and possibly life savings into their companies. Meredith Smith speaks for the whole group when she says in these tough times, the meetings give them focus and fortitude.
Sounds crazy, but as an entrepreneur, I'm in it to the end. I'm not looking to go back to work for corporate America. I don't think there's anybody in here that's interested in giving up.
I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
If you want a nap on a U.S. Airways flight with a little comfort, it's going to cost you. The airline already charges for sodas and coffee, and now you'll have to open your wallet if you want a blanket and pillow. A newsletter in the company shows the cost could be as much as $7 for a pillow-blanket combo. JetBlue cushioned their profits with the same idea earlier this summer. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Thanks for listening. Happy Election Day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too.
Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.